Hey everybody, it's Aldo Gandhi, and I just want to let you know really quickly that our swag shop is reopened. DeepDishTees.com is where you go, and that's Tees with T-E-E-S. Clever name, guys. They're the new home of our merchandise. You can get t-shirts, you can get caps, you can get coffee mugs, you can get hoodies, you can get all sorts of good stuff, and you'll help out the bar room with the purchase. So head over to DeepDishTees.com. The following program is a production of the Barroom Network. It is intended for all audiences.
Doug Buffon.
This defense sucks. This is moronic.
John Buffon.
If your best run plays are coming off end arounds, there's a problem.
Doug was behind the microphone first. He never held back.
Very difficult to score when your offense is on the bench. When your defense is out there giving up 70, 80, 70, 64-yard drives.
Now, it's his nephew, John, and there's no holding this buffoon back either.
An offensive-minded coach that's running an offense that got 9 yards and a half. A beaten-up defense that isn't necessarily performing in key situations.
I've had it! I have had it! I want somebody to get kicked in the ass!
How many games can you rattle off that involve the team running the ball 7 times and they win? I can't think of any.
I don't mind you getting beat. I got my ass whipped many times. But I tell you, I took somebody down with me.
Because Bears fans wanted to believe in the worst way that Chicago had a stable, competitive franchise. And this is what we got.
It's Buffon 55, the John Buffon Show.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Buffon 55, a fast-paced approach at breaking down the Chicago Bears. I'm John Buffon, and with me as always is my co-host and producer, Alyssa Barbieri. Alyssa, I guess the Bears are who we thought they were, even though we hoped they would be something that they aren't, but they are anyway. How you doing?
I'm doing about as well as you can expect. Kind of like David Montgomery, it feels like we're going to pick right where we left off last season with setting the tone for the show. That optimism? It was nice while it lasted for a week.
Bears picking up right where they left off last season. You name the player, they're picking up right where they left off last season. That was not exactly the ideal start to the season. A lot of people predicted it. We were hoping for something different, but it's certainly not surprising. Now they got to try to defend their home at their home opener against the Bengals. But we got a really good guest lined up to help us break down the Bengals. But just in case this is someone's first time listening or watching this show, Alyssa, can you give us a rundown of how this works?
Absolutely. So Buffon 55 has 3 segments, and we're going to start by learning about the Bears' upcoming opponent from someone who follows them closely. And today we have John Sheeran, the deputy manager of Cincy Jungle and co-host of the Orange and Black Insider, to help us break down the Bengals. That's then followed by our B55 segment. That's when I ask John 5 questions. And his responses must be completed within 55 seconds. The 55 is John's way of paying tribute to the great Doug Buffon, his uncle, his mentor, and a man who played 15 seasons with the Bears and wore number 55. We then finish things up by going into Buffon's basement, where Aldo Gandia joins John and me, and we have a little Bears therapy session where we get out all of our rage. But until then, John, take it away.
Thank you, Alyssa. Like you said, our guest is the deputy manager of Cincy Jungle and the co-host of the Orange and Black Insider. We now welcome John Sheeran to Buffon 55. John, how you doing? Appreciate you being on.
I'm great, guys. That was a fantastic intro. It's weird coming on programs where there's less optimism about that team than compared to the team that I cover, but that was quite enlightening, actually.
Yeah, that's what we do around here. We have a culture, as the Bears will tell you, they have a culture everyone looks up to. We have a different idea on that, but it is what it is. We're here to break down the Bears' Week 2 opponent in Cincy. They're at Soldier Field. We want to know all about the upcoming opponent. So I do want to talk on a pretty grand scale to start things off. What were the expectations for Cincinnati going into this season? I know that a lot of people picked them to finish last in the AFC North, a very competitive division, but they start off the year 1-0 and a pretty impressive overtime win. What are the expectations in Cincinnati for the Bengals?
To sum it up, I think it was just to be exciting. I think most fans figured that this team was not ready to legitimately compete in the AFC North. It's a tough division, just like the NFC North is as well. The Ravens and the Browns, they're probably still clearly one step ahead of them in terms of just the overall roster construction, the coaching, and just the solidity of the franchise as a whole. I think most people expected them to compete with the Steelers better this year, which has not been the case in the last eternity. But I think there was legit optimism that they could get out of fourth place in the division and kind of hover around 500 to be in that in the conversation to maybe push for third or second place in the division. But more importantly than anything, they have the components of an exciting offense, an offense that can score regardless of the defense that they're going up against. And that can lead to more exciting affairs than what we've seen in the last 5 years since the Bengals have been in the playoffs in 2015. This looks like the best comprised offense since that Andy Dalton squad in 2015, when they had Hugh Jackson as the offensive coordinator. They had a solid trio of receivers and a very good offensive line. They don't have as good of an offensive line as they did back then, but they do have the skill positions to really put up points, and they have a defense that can complement it and can be interesting on its own. So I think the expectations were to just be a lot more competitive in the last 2 years, but they still are probably 1 year away from legitimately competing and making a run in the playoffs.
We love to hear the best offense since Andy Dalton. That's going to be music to a lot of Bears fans' ears there. I do want to talk about the quarterback in Cincinnati, though. A lot of talk about Joe Burrow going into the season, a lot of excitement, but there was also some worry that he was maybe not fully back from that bad knee injury, maybe being tepid in training camp. What did you see in his first game back, and what are expectations for the young quarterback in Cincinnati in 2021?
So there was a lot of talk about how involved Joe Mixon was going to be because of how much they were going to unleash or hold back Joe Burrow from really opening up the offense as a whole. And I think the Bengals were like last in like actual pass rate on early downs compared to expectation. It was a very conservative offense for the most part, aside from a couple of big passing plays that really opened the game up for them. But I think it was true that they do kind of have Burrow on somewhat of a pitch count right now. They want to limit the traditional straight dropbacks that they had. I think they only had like 10 true pass sets for the offensive line. So those 10 times where the quarterback is actually taking his time back there and giving his offensive line a chance to potentially mess up. So there was a lot of play action, a lot more play action than we saw last year, and a lot more of a commitment to running on early downs. And then when they had to, you know, convert on third down, they asked Burrow to drop back and stand tall in there. But I think they are kind of a little bit more conservative right now just to get his feet wet a little bit. And that could have been expected, especially against a defense that you guys are familiar with the Minnesota Vikings, a very hard defense to kind of game plan and, you know, call protections against, because Mike Zimmer is kind of a bastard when it comes to just drawing up pressures like that. So I think that was more or less the plan in week one. And now it's going to be interesting to see if they allow Burrow to cook a little bit more as he's got more experience and is shaking off that rust.
You mentioned Joe Mixon, and I got to ask you, that you said that there could be a heavy dose of Joe Mixon going into the first game. I believe he did have to go to the trainer's table for a second, get taped up or tape cut off or something of that nature. That's kind of been the calling card for Joe Mixon the last couple of seasons. Can he make it through an entire season? But we're only in week two. Can the Bears expect a very healthy dose of Joe Mixon? Is he firing on all cylinders right now?
So, yeah, he played pretty well on Sunday. I don't quite remember when he had to go to the training table, but that has been a consistent theme with Mixon. You know, they've tried to involve him more as his tenure with the Bengals has continued. And obviously last year he missed a lot of time and ended up on IR, but he does seem to be really healthy right now. And he does seem to be in a running scheme that kind of fits his strengths. You know, Frank Pollock has come back as the offensive line coach. He institutes a lot of wide zone concepts, which allowed him to read his gaps from outside to in, kind of take advantage of that explosiveness and that elusiveness that he has at 220 pounds. So I would say that based off of how successful that it was last year, I guess he did win the FedEx ground player of the week or whatever with 130 yards or something like that. I do think that the Bears can expect him to touch the ball probably at least 25 to 30 times in this game.
Well, that could be the case, but the thing I think most Bears fans are concerned about is the Bears secondary, because they were torched by the LA Rams on their Sunday night opener, and it doesn't get any easier this week when you have a trio of Tyler Boyd and T. Higgins and Jamar Chase, all very capable wide receivers. Chase, a very promising prospect, had a really good first game for a guy that couldn't catch in the preseason, so to speak, which was the narrative coming out nationally, I should say, but can this Cincinnati trio of receivers take advantage of a secondary that really seemed lost last week?
There is another level of talent that Cincinnati has right now a receiver that they haven't had since probably 2015 when they had AJ Green, Mohamed Sanu, and Marvin Jones. But you compare those three players to these three players, and I think the explosion is on another level. You have both Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins on the perimeter, creating separation with route running ability that they didn't really showcase that much in college. T. Higgins has always been this contested catch marvel with a lot of size and a lot of jump ball ability, but now he's creating separation on his own with some savviness in his route running. And Ja'Marr Chase has gotten better at that as well compared to what we saw him at LSU. And when you know his hands kind of work after not working in the preseason. So at least that's all over the mental block that he was going through in August. That seems to be past him, but he's always had that game breaking speed to him. And obviously he's got connection with Burrow. And Tyler Boyd, I guess, was a little bit quiet against the Vikings. They kind of held him in check to maybe like three catches and 30 yards, but he's by far the best route runner. He's definitely going to be someone the Bears should watch for on third down because he can break open over the middle on those third downs. But right now they do seem to have a legitimate duo on the perimeter that can stretch the field, but also create separation with their physicality.
One thing that Bears fans are yearning for is a pass rush. They want to get to the quarterback. They were unable to do it last week, and maybe that contributed to the secondary being torched a lot of the times. You can look at the blown coverages, but they did not get a lot of pressure on Matt Stafford. Can you tell us a little bit about this Cincinnati offensive line and if there are any holes that the Bears could potentially exploit?
This is the area that can make this game closer than Bengals fans would like it to be, because against the Vikings, the interior offensive line of the Bengals was by far their biggest weakness, specifically center Trey Hopkins. He actually suffered a torn ACL along with Burrow last year towards actually the end of the season. So he's only about 9 months removed from actually tearing that ACL. So he was definitely looked a little bit rusty against the Vikings. He had one of his worst games of his career going up against Michael Pierce and Dalvin Tomlinson of the Vikings. So if Eddie Goldman specifically comes back, I know he was limited in practice today, and he's also going up against Akeem Hicks and Bilal Nichols. I think that trio right there can give this interior offensive line of the Bengals some issues, because Quinn Spain and Xavier Suofilo, yeah, they can give you like 15, 20 quality snaps a game, but anything else after that, it's kind of unknown. They're just journeyman veterans who are just mediocre players at best. So if there was a get-right opportunity for a Bears defensive line that's ready to eat, I think the interior trio of the Bengals can potentially provide that for them.
Yeah, Bears fans are starving for a good pass rush. They invested so much money in that front seven, and so far the investment is not paying off. But I do want to switch sides of the ball and talk about the Bears offensive line, because they're having some issues at left tackle. Jason Peters goes down. We're not sure if he's going to play. Larry Borum not looking good, like he's going to be able to jump in there. What does the pass rush look like for the Bengals? And if Andy Dalton is back there, not exactly the most fleet of feet, as you may well know, is he going to have some trouble with the Bengals pass rush if the Bears decide to, you know, throw the ball more than 5-6 yards this game?
So the Bengals definitely liked what they saw from their pass rush last Sunday, but that was also against a Vikings offensive line that has some issues of its own. It was kind of like that was the commonality between the Vikings and the Bengals. They both had interior offensive lines that couldn't handle the other team's defensive tackles. Larry Ogunjobi and BJ Hill are two of the Bengals' three techniques, the pass rushing defensive tackles. They both had phenomenal games against Minnesota's guards. And if that is an area of weakness potentially on the Bears' offensive line, that can be a place where Ogunjobi and Hill continue to thrive. But specifically with left tackle, regardless of who's going to be there, that's going to be Trey Hendrickson, who's going up against them. And he had a decent game against the Vikings. He couldn't really get home against Kirk Cousins, but if he has potentially a backup left tackle or Jason Peters, who's still kind of on the mend a little bit, that can be his opportunity to really break out. They invested a lot of money in Hendrickson because they lost Carl Lawson to the New York Jets, and there's still kind of an unknown with Hendrickson. We don't really know if he's as good as he was last year when he had 13 and a half sacks with the Saints. He might only be on track for maybe like 6 or 7 this year with the Bengals, which is a little bit less than what they probably prefer, but this could be a potential favorable matchup for him. And Sam Hubbard on the other side going up against the Bears' right tackle. He's also kind of a middling pass rusher. So there's not really one guy on this Bengals defensive line that can consistently win you a one-on-one matchup. But I think as a collective unit, is a decent amount of talent. And if there's potential issues for the opposing offensive line, that could give you some trouble.
Let's live in a fantasy land real quick and say that the Bears give Andy Dalton some time to throw. And let's live in an even deeper fantasy land and say that the game plan involves throwing the ball past the sticks at least once throughout this game. Are there any depth issues? We talked about the secondary issues for the Bears. Are there any depth issues in the secondary for the Bengals that could potentially be exploited down the field if the Bears choose to maybe try that out?
So regardless if it's Darnell Mooney or it's Allen Robinson, I think either of them could have a good time against Eli Apple, who is starting right now in place of Trey Waynes, who is currently nursing a hamstring injury. Waynes will not play in this game. Eli Apple started last week against the Vikings and kind of got torched, which is expected. He's Eli Apple. He's not really good, but he's being forced into as a starter right now. And right now the Bengals only have three safeties on the active roster. Ricardo Allen, who played like 20 snaps last week, he broke his hand and also strained his hamstring like on the same play. So he's on IR for 3 weeks. And so like they have Jesse Bates and Von Bell at safety, but behind them, like they don't really have any depth. So the secondary is probably the most banged up position group outside of the defensive line for the Bengals, but it's Eli Apple. Like I'm sure the Bears are probably game planning to attack him all game because it worked out for the Vikings last week.
There's hope. You're telling us there's hope that there could be a big game out
this
of
is the Bears, Bengals, man. There's always hope when you play them.
Oh, come on! You're on a Bears podcast. You don't. we're gonna compete for destitution here. But I do want to ask about the run defense of Cincinnati because it looks like David Montgomery's kind of splashed on the scene. He was the lone promising point of that opening game against the Rams. Looks like he came into this season ready to rumble, maybe be a top five back if Matt Nagy decides to actually utilize him and give him upwards of 20 carries. If they choose to put Montgomery in that workhorse role and give him 20, 25 carries, is he going to have opportunities to break off some big runs like he did last week?
I think this is the matchup of the game. I, as someone who doesn't follow the Bears that closely, it was surprising to see how, you know, efficient and effective David Montgomery was against the Rams, but the Bengals defensive line surprised me as well. In their efforts to stop Dalvin Cook, I think they limited him to like 60-something yards on 20 carries. And again, the Vikings' offensive line isn't that great, but still, he's Dalvin Cook, and he rushed for like 2,000 yards last year. So it was a great, phenomenal effort, and I think that is the strength of the Bengals' defensive line right now, not necessarily as pass rushers, but as run defenders. And I think the entire unit is playing a lot more cohesively with each other, especially with the second level. You have Von Bell coming down there as a linebacker. You have Logan Wilson, Jermaine Pratt filling their roles as run defenders. And I think their entire defensive line is really good at just filling gaps. So I think if the Bears want to force feed David Montgomery, it's going to be kind of like a Goliath versus Goliath situation where you have a great run defending unit against an offensive line that is really good at blocking for its talented running back. So that could be the matchup of the game, which is going to be probably the most exciting part.
Yeah, well, if it's going to be an even matchup, you can expect Matt Nagy to abandon the run very quickly then. So just be prepared for that. Before I toss you over to Alyssa, you can't talk about the Bears without talking about special teams. So we're going to bring up special teams. What is, for Bears fans who are watching this game, is there anyone to keep your eye on the Bengals, whether it be a kicker, a punter, a return man, a gunner, anyone that the Bears should keep an eye on whenever the special teams unit are on the field?
So their kicker might be their best player on the team, Evan McPherson. It's more of a joke, but maybe not really. I think he will eventually at some point get the opportunity to kick somewhere in the line of like a 60 or 63-yard field goal, and I have confidence that he can make it. I think not only does he have the leg power, he has this uncanny accuracy with just kicking it so effortlessly 60 yards down the field. He kicked the game-winning field goal in overtime. He was like the second rookie to ever do that behind like Jason Saunders like a couple years ago. So he's a really phenomenal kicker for being 22 years old. And on punt teams, they have a backup receiver named Stanley Morgan, who I've never seen a better gunner in my entire life, a guy who just consistently gets down the field on punt coverage unit and is always around the ball. He, I think, downed one of Kevin Huber, the punter's punts, inside like the five-yard line late in the game. So he's always very, really clutch when it comes to that. But they don't really have like a great punt returner in Darius Phillips, but he's okay. But it's really just McPherson, the young kicker, kicking on the road for his first time in a hostile environment. That should be interesting to see if the nerves kind of get to him.
You heard it first. Bengals are going to win on a 63-yard field goal. Yep. Is exactly. A three-point spread, so you never know. But Alyssa, before we get John out of here, you got any questions for him?
I do. So, John, you know, we know that there are some players that the Bears are going to have to look out for. Burrow, Mixon, Higgins, you know, Jamar Chase. But who is one under-the-radar player that you think that Bears fans should be aware of that could really make an impact in this game?
That's interesting. I think – so Mike Hilton was a slot cornerback for the Steelers for a number of years, a guy that Andy Dalton has played against when he was with the Bengals. And Hilton isn't the greatest cover corner in the slot. His real strength is in run defense and also blitzing off the edge. And when it comes to playing against an Andy Dalton-led offense, you know, pressure Andy Dalton, you definitely have a chance to slow down the offense. And I think Lou Anarumo can scheme up some good pressures with him, getting him on some slot zone blitzes. and really surprising Andy Dalton off the blind side a little bit. I think there will be a couple times in this game where Hilton can maybe come unblocked or maybe catch the Bears protection scheme by surprise, and Mike Hilton can be in a position to make some impact plays against a quarterback in Andy Dalton who, I mean, God love him for what he does well, but unfortunately identifying some late blitzers is not really one of those things, and evading them is not one of those things. So Mike Hilton coming blitzing out of the slot, I would definitely be on the watch for that.
And, you know, we can't let you go without getting your prediction for this game. So, you know, obviously the whole Andy Dalton revenge factor is in the mix. The Bengals are coming off that big overtime win. Who do you got early on here?
You know, a lot of Bengals fans thought that they could beat Andy Dalton last year when he was with the Cowboys. And then the Bengals fumbled, I think, 3 times in 5 minutes. And Dalton got his revenge in Paul Brown Stadium. So Dalton is 1-0 against his former team. So it's not going to be a cakewalk, especially when it's on the road. Bengals won like one road game under Joe Burrow last year, maybe one road game total. So, you know, I think it'll be closer than maybe Bears think, but I think the Bengals offense is definitely trending in the right direction, and the defense is a little bit better than what maybe we gave them credit for in the preseason. So I still think the Bengals kind of squeak out a win, maybe like 27-21.
That's not a bad prediction, because as you break down these teams, you start checking those boxes where it's just like advantage Cincy. So it could be a close game at Soldier Field. John, before we get you out of here, can you tell our listeners and viewers how they can connect with you, how they can listen to your work, how they can read your work, and just kind of interact with you?
Right. So all week long, we're going to cover the game leading up to the game and reactions and analysis of the game. So definitely check that out at Cincy Jungle if you want a Bengals perspective on that. We're doing a podcast tonight called the Orange and Black Insider Bengals Podcast. You can find us on all your podcast streaming options, and you can find me on Twitter at @John_Sheeran.
He is the deputy manager of Cincy Jungle and the co-host of the Orange and Black Insider, John Sheeran. Thank you so much for giving us a better view of the Cincinnati Bengals. Best of luck to you on Sunday. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks, John. Thanks, Alyssa.
Absolutely. And we'll be back with more Buffon 55 right after this.
The Barroom Network presents two fired up Bears fans.
They are ready to rumble
on Da Bear Debate.
Welcome back to Buffon 55. Now it's time for our B55 segment. That's when I ask John 5 questions, and his responses must be completed within 55 seconds. The 55 is John's tribute to the great Doug Buffon, his uncle, who played 15 seasons with the Bears and wore number 55. So, John, we got 1 week under your belt. Are you ready for this?
I guess, yeah. It was a great tune-up for everybody. So let's get into it.
So the local and national media can't stop talking about the Bears quarterback situation. Andy Dalton didn't play terribly. He completed 27 of 38 passes for 206 yards, but 0 touchdowns. And he did throw a costly interception in the end zone. What was your assessment of the Red Rifles' performance? The clock starts when you do.
Well, this is exactly who Andy Dalton is and exactly who Matt Nagy is. They spent all offseason signing wide receivers that can run a sub-4.4, and then they hand the offense over to a quarterback that doesn't push the ball down the field, and they don't call any big shot plays that could get them back into the game. So from now on, we basically know what we're going to get from Andy Dalton. And with the defense looking shaky at best, they're going to need a lot more than 14 points per game. And I don't think Andy Dalton can get you 25 to 30 points consistently. This short nickel and dime crap is only going to win you the time of possession battle, and it forces you to consistently think about going for it on fourth down, which, as you see, did not work out very well. You actually have to get in the end zone to score points. You have to kick it through the upright to score points. Look, Andy Dalton got his start like he was promised, and Matt Nagy got to see him in the regular season like he said he had to, but I think we have already seen enough of Andy Dalton.
Yeah, I mean, Andy Dalton didn't play terribly. I think that was one of the biggest surprises for me. I think we all expected him to be much worse than he was, especially going up against that Rams defense. But at the same time, that kind of quarterback play is not going to win you games, especially when your defense is just declining rapidly at this point. I don't think they're going to be as bad going down the stretch, but you're not going to be able to win football games with that kind of quarterback play, especially when you have you-know-who sitting on the bench behind you.
Right. You can't put together we put together a 16, 17, 18 play drive that resulted in nothing except eating up 7 minutes and you still don't score any points. You got to have some explosive down the field plays. What did you sign all these fast guys for if you're not going to put them, on some go routes?
Yeah, and the Bears were the only NFL team that did not attempt a downfield pass longer than 15 yards this week. And Marquise Goodwin's even calling Matt Nagy out for it, you know. It's just already we're in week one and it kind of sounds even like the players are fed up.
Bears are back.
And speaking of Justin Fields, he came in for 5 plays. He made his Bears debut. It was really quick, 5 plays, where he completed a pass and even ran for a touchdown. But Dalton will remain the starter for now. Recently, ESPN's Adam Schefter made comments that Fields sitting isn't necessarily a bad thing and pointed to players like Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, and Tom Brady after they sat and the success that they had. What's your take on Fields getting better for sitting on the bench? 55 seconds is on the clock.
Listen, this is such BS, and it's such a lazy narrative to cling on to. Patrick Mahomes was behind Alex Smith, a 3-time Pro Bowler who threw for 4,000 yards and 26 touchdowns the year that Mahomes actually sat. Aaron Rodgers was behind Brett Favre. Tom Brady was a 6th-rounder behind Drew Bledsoe. Not exactly a quarterback competition there. So who is Justin Fields behind? A guy that came to Chicago a month or two before he got there, and he was a backup in 2020? These aren't even close to the same situations. Can we stop acting like no rookie ever played okay in his first season? Did Peyton Manning do all right? Did Deshaun Watson do all right? Did Cam Newton do all right? Was there anything on Sunday night that Andy Dalton did that Justin Fields could not have done? If he's ready for his own special packages, especially running the ball near the goal line, then he is ready to start. Justin Fields gives this chance the best team, just best chance to win right now, but I don't think Matt Nagy cares about that because he may have been assured an extra year.
Yeah, you know, when people bring that argument up to light, which, I mean, it's true. There are some of the best to ever play have, you know, had success after sitting. But then there's also a crop of players that, like you said, have been successful right from the get-go in their rookie season. Yeah. And Justin Fields has the chance to do that. Because, again, like, the situations are completely different. Like, I understand the initial plan was to sit Fields until he was ready. Like, that's what they were talking about when they drafted him. But, you know, I kind of expected that plan to evolve. Like, once you saw that he was ready, that he was outperforming Dalton, that he brought things to the offense that Dalton can't. And I think that's what's really frustrating people is that Nagy's just so stubborn. For whatever reason, he feels like he owes Dalton something. I thought after the first start, that would be enough. Maybe he wants to get his revenge game, even though he already got that last year with Cowboys. But, I mean, at this point, it's just hard to imagine. While even Bill Lazor is saying that Fields is ready.
Exactly.
If everyone, the players are saying Fields is ready, the coaches are, except for Nagy, what is the holdup? Like, when are we going to know? Matt Nagy said, we will know when Fields is ready. Well, everyone's saying he is. So what's
the offensive
problem?
Coordinator says he is. The offensive coordinator said he can handle whatever. The players talk about the aura of Justin Fields. And Matt Nagy says, I know better than everybody. Mm-mm. Andy Dalton is what we're going to go with. And once again, to put an exclamation point on what I was trying to say, if you aren't worried about winning right now, then someone told you that you have a job next year.
That's a very good point. Surprisingly, on Sunday night, it wasn't the offense that was the worst unit on the field. That honor belonged to the defense. You know, the defense used to be the strength of this Bears team, but they looked lost at times out there, giving up big passing plays, you know, through busted coverages and letting Matthew Stafford just carve them up for 320 yards and three touchdowns. What did you see out of this defense that is the most alarming? 55 seconds and go.
Look, I saw the line, the linebackers, the secondary, all running around like they were trying to figure out what to do in real time. This was a completely deflated effort. That mean edge that we have been accustomed to seeing was non-existent. When the safeties forget to touch a guy down on the ground, I think it's safe to say that you aren't fully focused. That's bad execution, bad preparation, and bad coaching. From a personnel standpoint, all the players that are eating up your salary cap are disappointing you right now. Khalil Mack is no longer a one-man wrecking crew. Robert Quinn, well, he's picking up right where we left off last year. And Eddie Jackson may not think tackling's important, but I think it's pretty important in the game of football. So we are seeing the sad decline of a once dominant defense because 2018 looks like it was a century ago. Some of that core unit is still there, but they are aging by the minute. Looking at this current squad, why should I believe it's going to get better as the season goes on? I saw a lot of holes there.
Yeah, I think we expected the Bears to lose this game and that the defense was going to have troubles with the Rams, this offense. We finally have a quarterback, but not like that. That was very alarming, and it wasn't even some of the guys you might have expected. Like, Kendall Vildor held up, you know, pretty well. It was the veterans, people you didn't expect, you know, Eddie Jackson, DeSean Gibson, even though Marquis Christian just got, like, just blasted in the slot. But, I mean, it was that's just, you're not used to seeing that defense. Like, there is a stat, I think the Bears gave up the most points since 2015. And when you start talking about 2015 and defense, like, it's just not a good look. You know, I don't think it's going to be as bad as it was on Sunday night. Like, you really hope that they clean things up and it'll get easier along the way. But it's still pretty alarming, especially like you said, when some of the guys you're paying a lot of money to are not stepping up.
Yeah, you're putting that's a bad investment. Whenever the biggest chunk of that salary cap pie is going to guys that can't get it done, then that's just a bad investment because you can't allocate that money anywhere else.
Exactly. Okay, so John, we're going to try to, you know, talk about a little, some of the positives, actually the one main positive here, which was David Montgomery and how he looked like the Bears' best player on offense. Last week, you predicted Montgomery would be a top five running back in the league this season, and he got off to a great start with 108 rushing yards on 16 carries. Can Montgomery maintain this pace, and will we see his usage go up? You've got 55 seconds.
Well, I guess it feels right. I guess it feels good to be right about something. Like I said last week, David Montgomery is going to be a star if Matt Nagy allows him to be. He starts off the game ripping off a big run, and he established himself very early on in that matchup. But once again, there were series where he wasn't even on the field. Matt Nagy had to be the smartest guy in the room and make sure that Damian Williams got his 6 carries for 12 yards. And you just can't randomly forget about having a weapon like David Montgomery. He had 10 rushes in the first half, and I think 6 or 7 in the second half. This guy can be a workhorse, and he is turning into your best offensive player. He can get 20 to 25 carries. And wouldn't it be exciting to see him in some, like, RPO option plays with a mobile quarterback? If only the Bears had an athletic mobile quarterback on the roster to maximize Montgomery's talents. Unfortunately, no one's coming to mind. But yes, David Montgomery is on an awesome trajectory to be a top-tier running back in the NFL.
You know, there was a point after, I think, his first 3 carries where he had 57 yards. And then the ensuing possession, he didn't get the ball at all. And it was like, are you kidding me? Did you forget about him? You know, because Montgomery was easily the best player on the field for the Bears. But, like, you know, I'm just, you know, he picked up where he left off. He, even though the offensive line, there were definitely questions on the interior there. Now, he's still just kind of running like maniac. All this, the yards after, oh my goodness, yards after contact. He leads the league in that. I think it was like 89 or 87 of his yards. It's pretty impressive. I'm really excited to see what he can do this year. But again, I'm just concerned with Matt Nagy getting away from the running game. Yeah. I mean, when is that not going to be a concern with him? Even when Montgomery shows him, hey, I deserve more carries. And we didn't quite get to the 20, which I was watching that. Four away from the 20, but I don't know. Maybe we'll get there on Sunday.
I don't understand how you can have that kind of a weapon and that you know, that modest of a passing game and not say, okay, let's run the ball down their throat. But no, let's, you know what we need to do? It's got to be 3rd and 8. We got to throw 5-yard curls. That's what we need to do. That's what's going to fix everything. I know I'm just like randomly like taking pot shots now, but it was just frustrating.
Yeah. It kind of feels like, we're a few weeks in, right? With how frustrated
we're in mid-season form, Melissa.
Just like this offense, apparently.
Yeah, no, I even said during the game, like, that horizontal offensive scheme is really in midseason form where you got to run back and forth and get those 2-3 yards whenever you need 5. Ooh, we are firing on all cylinders now. That Matt Nagy offense revolutionized. It's cutting edge. You just have to be smart enough to understand it, I guess.
I was looking at Allen Robinson's route chart and it made me sick. Like, are you kidding me? Please, for the love of God, don't do that to him again.
Yeah. I guess they don't want to pay him. So they're just going to crash his production this year and say, I don't know, you had a pretty bad year. I don't know. I don't think we can pay you that. Your average pattern was only about 3 yards off the line of scrimmage. Well, who the hell's in charge of that? But I digress.
Yeah, the guy that's going to be here through 2022, apparently, because he doesn't look like he's someone who's on the hot seat right now.
He's comfortable.
And finally, as Bill Belichick would say, we're on to Cincinnati. Most believe the Bears would lose to the Rams to start the season, but a lot thought Week 2 against Cincinnati would be the first notch in the win column. If the Bears were to lose to the Bengals on Sunday, what does that mean for the Bears moving forward? And what does it mean for Matt Nagy? No clock for this one, John. Let it all out.
Well, I know Bears fans are ready to pounce the second this thing goes off the rails, but I'm not sure it means anything for the Bears, and I'm not sure it means anything for Matt Nagy. Like I said before, Matt Nagy seems pretty confident in his job security. It's quite obvious that Justin Fields actually gives the Bears the best chance to win right now. And if Matt Nagy isn't worried about winning right now, then he must think there's going to be a next year. But I will say this, if the defense struggles again, and the offense cannot put up enough points, that will be a further indictment on this regime, because Matt Nagy was brought in to revolutionize the Bears offense. And to this point, he has been unable to deliver on that promise. He rode the coattails of a dominant defense for 3 years, and now the defense looks like it can't carry the weight of the team anymore. So it's time to pay the piper. You can't hide behind the defense anymore, and we're running out of people to blame. But like I said, it really only matters what ownership thinks. And I don't have much confidence in them either. We'll be back with Buffon's Basement right after this.
Baseball at the Barroom. On Monday nights, get ready for the Friendly Confines Extra Innings. It's 30 minutes, it's clever, it's concise, and it's all Cubs coverage. That's followed by a killer White Sox show, South Burbs Hitmen. Then on Thursday afternoon, it's Cubs and Sox opinions and analysis with Crosstown Crosstalk. Baseball at the Barroom. Join us live and or on demand.
Welcome back to Buffon 55. It's time for Buffon's Basement. That's when Alyssa and I open up the door, walk down the stairs, and open up the sarcophagus and dust off that crusty old mummy we call Aldo Gandia. Aldo, are you awake back there?
No.
Nope.
I am totally awake. Great guest, great interview, and great rants there, John. As somebody said in the chat room, you're kind of capturing everyone's frustration, and I can't believe that we're back in this situation. It's like the one of those science fiction movies where you just keep living the terrible day over and over again.
The Bears are Groundhog Day. That's basically what and Bill Murray's a Bears fan, so this all works out really. The universe is against us, apparently. What you could do is you could replay what we could do, Aldo, to save a lot of time, is just replay a lot of the shows from last season and just dub in different names.
We'd never do that, even though even though they're very entertaining, we've got new misery to share with people.
You're right. You're absolutely right. And we just brought you into the show, Aldo. So I'm going to start with you, and I want to talk about that quarterback situation, because I think, as much as Andy Dalton said, there's going to be a lot of excited fans coming into Soldier Field on Sunday, and he's excited to hear them get loud. I have a feeling he's not going to be so positive if they happen to go 3-and-out on their first drive, or he fumbles or throws an interception, or they don't pick up a first down or whatever. I don't think it's going to take much for the Boo Birds to come out in this game. So what can we expect at the home opener for the Bears?
Well, I'm going to take the advice of one of the folks in the chat room has been chastising all the negativity, Holy Samurai Jerusalem. And I'm going to kind of look at this as a glass half full situation. I do believe that game against the Rams for Andy Dalton was his preseason game. And so to me, all he can do is go up. I'm reminded of his performance last year with the Dallas Cowboys. It was an ugly start for him as well. And that offensive line from last year with the Cowboys sort of resembled what we have with the Chicago Bears. So I do believe that there is a good chance that they're going to make the necessary alterations, that there's going to be a level of comfort now with the second game that most of the starters are going to be in. I do believe that this coaching staff is capable of coming up with a good game plan. And frankly, that game plan against the Rams wasn't bad. The only thing that was missing were, as you guys said earlier, it was those deep ball attempts, you know. So make some minor corrections and so forth, and hopefully you get 100% execution from Andy. You know, looking back at his last several games with the Cowboys, three touchdowns, one touchdown, two touchdowns, two touchdowns, two touchdowns, three touchdowns. So he was averaging two touchdowns a game. I don't see why he can't do that against his former team.
Aldo, real quick, if you're looking at Andy Dalton's stats right there, can you, and I don't know, but I'd like to know who the opponents were that he was playing against.
Why do you got to ruin a good argument?
I'm just curious.
Okay. Vikings.
Mm-hmm. Really bad defense last year.
Baltimore. Baltimore had a decent defense. Good defense. Cincinnati, game, but they won 30-7. 49ers and the Eagles, and of course the Giants. I left that one out. He had zero touchdowns and was sacked six times.
So, I'm sensing a narrative here, Aldo, that you're crafting some things, The thing that comes down, I think Andy Dalton is a capable quarterback. I think we can all agree on that. And honestly, I think we can all agree that he's in a pretty rough situation right now with where he's at. But Alyssa, do you have any confidence that the game plan is going to be different than it was last week? Because why would it take an entire game to figure out that, holy crap, this ain't working? Why are there not adjustments made at halftime? Why are there not adjustments made mid-game? Is it incompetence, or is it stubbornness, or why do we think that Matt Nagy can all of a sudden just change his game plan around? As I had a big strike of lightning out there. I don't know if you guys heard that or not.
I don't know. I thought it was like a toilet flushing, and I thought it was a sound effect or something. Like, that was perfectly timed.
That is perfect. A strike of lightning, and I must have upset the football gods. Literally just struck right outside my door. So
George Halas.
Yeah, George Halas is pissed.
Well, why is it striking at your house? You're not the one doing it.
What did I do, Papa Bear? Come on.
to get back to what you're saying, I mean, I think with Matt Nagy, I mean, we've seen this for 3 years now. I think we can agree it's a mixture of incompetence and stubbornness. And I mean, I feel like you should hope. I mean, I feel like we should hope that they're going to open it up downfield, especially after he's taking all this flack this week from the media, from his own players. Like, you have to hope that he's going to throw the ball down the field this time. And like, I understand what they were like trying to do. They were nervous against the Rams defense, and like those quick short passes worked. But again, at the same time, you need to stretch the ball down the field. So, I mean, I'm hoping that we see that, because if not, it's going to be raining booze. Like, I know Andy Dalton's excited, but I mean, the only thing that's not going to be booze is probably going to be the Justin Fields chants and cheers when he comes onto the field for hopefully 10 plays. Let's see him for 10 plays. Or maybe they might not even throw him out there at all. No. But, I mean, I expect to see Fields a little bit more. But, I mean, Nagy. I feel like it's the same stuff with him. Like, I don't know why we're surprised at this point. I don't think we're surprised. It's just we keep talking about it because it keeps happening every weekend.
You're absolutely right. What the track record, how long did it take him to make a change on the offensive line last year? How long did it take him to give up play calling abilities and then just basically take them back last year? How long does it take him to actually get out of what he thinks is right? So if he thinks Andy Dalton is going to start, I don't think he gives a crap if they go 0-4. They can't really get move the ball down the field. He thinks what he's doing is right, and he's going to stick to it, and he's going to tell you why. And then they're going to figure out what the why is. And then they're going to look at the tape and they're going to tell you how great practice was. And you're going to get so full of word soup that you might throw up on yourself at the post game press conference. So I wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt the first couple years that, okay, this guy is a smart dude. Obviously he's an NFL head coach. He knows football. Let's not just pretend like he just got that way by he just fell into the position. However, I think a big deficiency in his coaching style is he does not adapt well. He does not tailor things to his players. He does not tailor things to what the game is requiring. There are very few adjustments. And I think that's going to be a big downfall to this team. Well, it has been a big downfall, but it's going to continue to be a big downfall for this team.
You know, I got to tell you, Bill, you guys mentioned Bill Lazor's comments today about Justin Fields. I actually pulled that clip so that we could hear from his own words the level of confidence that he has in Justin Fields.
He looked like he belonged. He looked like he could be successful. Nothing was too big for him, which we didn't think it would be. But I would have said after the preseason that he's moving quickly and ready for whatever's thrown at him. So I don't think anything's changed.
If he's ready for it, then why isn't he getting those additional chances?
I think Matt's probably addressed what his philosophy is on the quarterback position.
Look at this.
Like, basically that last part was, it's not my call, I can't control it, y'all got to deal with it. Like, that's pretty much what his answer was.
And can I add or speculate that perhaps also he was throwing his hat into the ring for head coaching job?
I literally was going to say that.
Let's go.
Literally going to say that. That dude is vying to be a head coach. And I think he loves the idea of interim head coach Bill Lazor. but that's not really
up to at this point.
Yeah. I don't think that'll happen. I don't think the Bears have ever fired somebody midseason. So I don't think it'll be this year just because of who Matt Nagy is and how they feel about him. Much like we were saying, the players feel that way. The offensive coordinator feels that way, but that doesn't matter. It only matters what the head coach says. And so we'll see what happens going into Cincinnati. And if there is a bigger package for Justin Fields, like you said, Alyssa, maybe it's 10 plays and we all get our Justin Fields fix for the week. But I
think Justin Fields is the number one quarterback already, even though it's going to be Andy Dalton starting. It's just the opinion that he should be in there. Like, as you just said, John, from the assistant coach, from the players, from the fans, from the national media, the local media, from everybody who's ever seen this young man play and seen what Andy Dalton is currently, they all are thinking he's the number one quarterback. And so anything that delays him from actually becoming the number one quarterback is just going to hurt Matt Nagy's reputation with his players, with his coaching staff, with the fans of Chicago and the organization. So he better wise up quickly.
But that comes down to, it doesn't matter though, does it? To him, it probably only matters what Ryan Pace and the McCaskey family think, right?
I guess. I mean, I think that they presented the plan. I think Pace and Nagy are in unison here. They presented the plan to Ted Phillips and the McCaskeys, and they said that, you know, this is what we did in Kansas City and we want to stick to it, give him time to develop. They bought into that plan. They got their blessing on that plan. And I think that they're reluctant to make that change very quickly, but it will happen. It will happen by week three or four, the latest, and it could even happen at Cincinnati, where he may not start the game, but he'll play for the majority of the game, and it will be obvious then that it's official. Justin Fields is the number one starting quarterback for the Chicago Bears now and for hopefully the next 10, 15 years.
I can't begin to tell you how tired I am of hearing about Kansas City. Like I am so tired of hearing about what Matt Nagy did 4 years ago when he was a play caller for 1 year in Kansas City and they drafted Patrick Mahomes. I'm so tired of hearing about the Kansas City model. This ain't Kansas City. This ain't the Chiefs. This is the Chicago Bears. There are different personnel. There's different ways of going about things, different ownership, different GM. I'm so tired about hearing about the Kansas City plan. Because where are the results? I mean, that Kansas City plan turned around results pretty damn quick when they drafted Patrick Mahomes, didn't it? Didn't that work in like a year? They were a good team when they had Alex Smith, and then they took it to the next level in 2 years. The Bears aren't at the same starting point. So I'm tired of hearing about this Kansas City plan because the Kansas City plan is not the Chicago plan, and the Chicago plan is garbage right now. So I want to move off the quarterbacks because we could probably talk about this for 40 hours. But I do want to talk about another big concern, and that's the offensive line. Looked like Larry Borum didn't practice today, meaning Wednesday, and I guess Jason Peters was limited. If Jason Peters can go, then I guess they have their starting left tackle back. But what's your concern level with this offensive line, Alyssa?
I mean, last week I was concerned, and now that concern is just escalated, especially with the injuries. I feel like there's a curse on the tackle position, like, this year. I don't, like, after in training camp, it looked like we'd finally gotten through things, and then Peters goes down, and it's like, oh, crap, okay, but here comes Borum. And he lasted, like, what, 13 plays before he went down, and then we're back to Elijah Wilkinson, who struggled at left tackle during the preseason, and we're like, oh, crap, well, here we go. And, you know, it's concern is very high, especially when you have Andy Dalton, right? Unless their intent is to simply, again, just pound the ball and throw those quick, short passes. Like, I mean, he's going to get mauled back there at one point whenever he tries to take a shot down the field. So, I mean, it's just like another reason to go to field sooner. And I know Nagy's, you know, worried about getting his quarterback hurt, but you can't play that way. You can't think like that. That's why I think that Fields would probably – he'd probably wait till week four to put him in because – he's facing the Lions, you know, a defense that's not as good as the Browns the previous week. So, I mean, the offensive line, it feels like another excuse that Nagy's going to use why Fields is not in there.
Aldo?
Yeah, I think, I do think that Elijah Wilkinson can get the job done at an average NFL level. Danny Shimon broke down some of his tape and said, you know, what I've seen of him so far and what he looked at was preseason tape is that he can probably do an adequate job at left tackle. I haven't studied him enough to have a solid opinion on that. And he's rarely played left tackle. I think all of last season, he played every snap at right tackle. But he is a veteran guy, and he should be able to make the change. And then with the play calling, you can help the offensive linemen, of course, by chipping and running away from that left tackle spot and so forth. But it's definitely a problem. Jason Peters did not play a full season last season. I'm not sure when he's last played a full season. There was no reason to believe that he was going to be the 17-game solution. It'll probably be a 7-game solution, and hopefully, you know, we'll get injured guys back and so forth, and maybe you find a hidden gem on the waiver wire. Highly unlikely. But yeah, it's definitely a concern, and one that can only be remedied with play calling and a mobile quarterback.
Guys, if this team happens to lose to the Bengals on Sunday, they have the Browns after that, which the Browns, even though they lost to the Chiefs, look pretty damn good. So if this team would potentially go 0-3 going into that Detroit game, one of two things. I mean, I want to get your opinion on that first and foremost, but does that mean Justin Fields, like, if Andy Dalton starts 0-3, then doesn't it make sense just to put Justin Fields in against at home against the Lions in week 4? And second of all, Is there a scenario in which, I know we our common theme here is we think that Matt Nagy might be safe for another year, but is there a scenario, because let's not forget that this team lost six games in a row last year at one point. Is there a scenario to that ownership, the front office looks at this and says, Matt, we'd love to give you another year, but holy crap, did the wheels fall off on this season? You lost the team. You lost the locker room. These guys don't want to play for you. Do you, Alyssa, can you envision a scenario where that happens?
Possibly, because I was just looking at the schedule and there is a stretch where they could lose six games. Starting in week five against the Raiders, they play the Raiders, the Packers, the Buccaneers, the 49ers, the Steelers, and the Ravens. So like that could be a rough stretch. And there's a possibility they could lose six in a row. Luckily, both all those games are cushioned by the Lions, but they lost to the Lions again last year. So, I mean, that's probably the only reason why. I mean, I still think he's safe through 2022, but it would take that would probably help, like, to really kind of really heat that seat up. But at this point, I just think he's safe. And that's the frustrating thing, is it would need to take something pretty drastic for that to happen.
Yeah.
Aldo, if this team loses six games in a row again for the second straight season, are there no consequences for that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's a long history of votes of confidence, statements saying, yeah, you know, the manager, head coach will be around for a while, and then that's broken. So, and the Chicago Bears have parted ways with previous coaches recently, Lovie Smith, every head coach they've had, John Fox, the last three, they've broken the contract. Those coaches left with time left on their contract. So it could happen again the fourth time. I don't think the McCaskies love doing that. I think that they are fed up with having to pay head coaches to sit at home and watch football. So
then hire the right one.
Yeah, that would help. and hire the right person to hire the right one, you know?
Right.
So that's the issue here. But I do think there's a possibility of it. But if you're going to do that, I think it's a two-headed monster at this point. Nagy and Pace, they should go or come together.
Yeah, I think they're attached at the hip. They're either both gone or they're both here. So I think that I think that there is a scenario where if they would just tank this season and there's Roy with the diner reference. I love that, because the Bears are run like a family diner. But I will say that I think there is a scenario where if they completely bomb out, then they have no other other choice than to do it. I feel like I think that the McCaskies do listen to public opinion. They may not act on it all the time, but I think they always have their ear out listening to it. And if this team completely bottoms out again, and they get worse, whenever they said they had to see progress at the end of the year in the press conference last year, they said they had to see progress this year. If there is no quantifiable progress, because I need to know what progress really is. One would think wins and losses, but we're talking about the Chicago Bears. So I want to see what progress actually is. And if there isn't any, are you really going to say to the fans, I know we said we needed to see progress, but gosh darn it, Matt Nagy's a nice guy. And gee whiz, Ryan Pace has a nice head of hair. There's going to be some, if they do bottom out, they might not have a choice. I do want to talk about one thing before we kind of wrap things up a little bit, because I'm looking at the chat room and we talk about this a lot, but I do want to bring it up again just because it seems to be a really good talking point about the Bears potentially going to Arlington Heights. And so I've talked about this a little bit, although you have too. Alyssa, I want to get your opinion on it. If they are inclined to move to Arlington Heights, do you care? Do you think it's a good thing, a bad thing? Do you think it opens up more opportunities? What do you think if they move out of Soldier Field and over to Arlington Heights?
I mean, I'd be all for it. I would love a new state-of-the-art stadium and to host a Super Bowl in Chicago. Like, I mean, I'm all for that. I mean, there's something to be said about the history of Soldier Field, and it's great going there and knowing, you know, all of the great Bears that have played in that stadium. But at the same time, I feel like you look at around the league, Soldier Field has the least amount of fans you can hold in that stadium. And at this point, I feel like a move to Arlington Heights wouldn't be bad necessarily. Yeah. Maybe it'll be some good mojo finally for this team. Maybe you can leave Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace, leave them in Soldier Field, And let's just
don't tell them. Don't tell them that they moved. Just leave them there. Just don't. Like, hey, we'll see you at Soldier Field, guys. And then you're over at the Arlington Heights complex. Yeah, what the hell?
Do we have a game today?
Yeah.
Oh, there's Andy Dalton.
He's there too. I'm with you, Alyssa. I think there's a difference of opinions, and I've said this before, a difference of opinions of people that routinely go to Bears games and some that just go once a year, once every 2 years, once every 5 years. I think the people that rarely go to Bears games say, I want to go to the traditional Soldier Field. I want to see these hallowed halls. I want to see all the tradition. And then people that go to the game say, no, parking's a mess. There's really not a whole lot to do around the stadium. Getting transportation is a disaster, and so tailgating is just as tough to do over there as well. So if you go to Arlington Heights, you can build this complex, like you said, Alyssa, that could potentially host a Super Bowl because you'd have the actual logistics to do so, and then maybe you have like this hub of entertainment and sports like you see in other sports cities like Philadelphia that has this big hub called Xfinity Live outside of all of their stadiums in Philadelphia. People go there 5 hours before, they're there 5 hours after. They're watching the game. They may not even be going to the game, but they're going to go over there and they're going to watch the game from this huge screen inside of this hub, this big entertainment thing. So you could put a casino there. You could maybe put off-track betting there if you wanted to. But you can maybe you get hotels that are close to there. Parking might be a little more ample. Now, we're talking pretty far into the future because this would take a lot of work to construct. This would take a lot of things to really move forward. But if you want this to be, and I'm sure the Bears want a money-making venue, then all of a sudden you have something where you can have events at. Maybe they do put a retractable roof on there and you can host concerts and you can, and that would put you a long way into hosting a Super Bowl. So I think that, I know Bears fans would think that it's blasphemy to have a retractable roof on the football field. So maybe they only put it over there for like indoor concerts or something like that. Maybe. But I would be all for it. But then again, I think that there are some people that just can't get over, like, like I said before, let's not pretend like the Bears didn't play at Wrigley before they played at Soldier Field. And they also said there would never be lights at Wrigley. Yeah, there are. They would never tear down Yankee Stadium. They did. So let's not act like this would be like a blasphemous kind of act that they tore down Soldier Field. They already renovated it. It doesn't even look the same that it did back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. They already changed it all around. And it was kind of a half-assed renovation, if you ask me. So I would be all for the Arlington Heights. But Aldo, I have a feeling you'd be all for it because I think that you could just watch from your rush from your porch, couldn't you?
It would be a lot closer, that's for sure. A good long walk. But John, to respond to some of your points, it would be nice if the Bears family really cared about what the fans think, right? But they don't. They send out the stories. They go take pictures of the fans and so forth. Right now, it's all about the dollar. And so the reason Virginia McCaskey went to that game in Los Angeles is so that the family could say, see how nice this is? And you know how much more money we're going to get? And she's, resistant because of her father, wanted to play in Chicago. But things have changed dramatically since he said those words. And so I think that, if anything, she would want to maybe make the move now, knowing that she'd be leaving the franchise, her father's franchise, at such a prosperous level that would just be hard for her to say no. So I think, that's a part of this story, too.
Yeah, and let's not act like, oh, you're taking the Bears out of Chicago. They're not the Chicago Bears anymore. The Washington football team doesn't play in D.C. Both New York teams don't even play in the same state that they represent. There are plenty of teams that don't play in the city they represent because the logistics are bad, because you got to find a space where you have parking and you can put entertainment and you can make more money. And like you said, Aldo, I think ultimately that's the biggest factor in this. How much money can we make off of a new stadium? So I think Dallas is another really good example of that as well. So I think that they need to think about it. But this is how Bears is it though? If they were just like, we can't, they're hesitant for progress because, oh man, Soldier Field, we can't possibly leave. Think of all the history here. And the Bears leaving Soldier Field, we can't, then you know what? Just keep pretending it's 1985 then.
Just keep doing the Super Bowl shuffle. Keep talking about the 46 defense. Keep talking about Walter Payton, and then the rest of us can just sit here and think, why the hell, whenever we talk about great Bears teams, do we have to talk about stuff that happened 40 years ago? And if we're talking about a good team, it's a team that made it to the Super Bowl but lost, or a team that was really good but underperformed in the playoffs. Like I'm tired of clinging to that kind of crap. I want to actually be excited about something, but that's neither here nor there. So could they go to Arlington Heights? It might take a while. I think that it would take. I think that you have to probably even make roads that would help get there as far as transportation goes.
Yeah, I mean, right now it already gets really bottled up rush hour time, and so yeah, there'd be a lot of infrastructure changes, and they do. My wife is in the hospitality industry, and so she knows a lot about the hotel situation in many cities, and of course Arlington Heights in Chicago. And she says they would need to build several hotels to accommodate the influx of people who would want lodging near the stadium, because there's very little available.
Without a doubt. So we'll see. That's what we have to talk about on these podcasts now, because the product in the field isn't going to give us anything positive to talk about. So maybe we can talk about a fancy new stadium. That can be the positive. We'll talk about new stadiums and David Montgomery, and we'll keep this a very positive podcast.
Eventually Justin Fields. Eventually.
Yeah.
Eventually.
Maybe for 10 plays.
And if I can add, you know, that if they were to make this move, and so now you've got the Soldier Field there, I'm all for tearing that thing down. And then, you know, that stadium is in a museum campus. Add a new state-of-the-art museum. I know that the George Lucas Star Wars thing, I'm not a big Star Wars guy, but George Lucas wanted to build his museum here in Chicago. It ended up going to L.A. Well, you know, there are so many other things that you can do with that space that would help tourism in Chicago more days than what the Chicago Bears offer the city of Chicago. So it could be a win-win for the city of Chicago, Chicago Bears, for tourists, for fans, for everybody. So let's make it happen.
All right, I'll make a call.
I knew you had
dogs at the hookup.
Yep, I'll make a call. But before we close some things out, I just want to talk about all the things going on at the Barroom Network. We debuted a show 2 weeks ago called The Bear Debate. Tyler Ellis and I go head-to-head with some burning topics about the Chicago Bears. We had our show come out earlier this week. You're going to want to check that out, because it gets pretty heated, gets pretty combative, and there is a lot of energy in that, as you may assume, given the fact that it's me and Tyler Ellis on there. And then Aldo does a good job as acting as the referee, breaking us up whenever we get into it. So that's The Bear Debate. That is out on the Barroom Network right now. Give that either a watch on YouTube or the audio version all across the podcast platforms. Also, be sure to check out Bear Football directly after the Bears game. If you think that we get heated on these shows, you can only imagine what the raw emotion is like after the Bears game is over. And that's whenever I start saying things where I'm just like, okay, I got to settle down. I gotta rein myself in a little bit. But that's basically
for the phone 55.
Yeah, I'm like, save this for Wednesday. Save it for Wednesday. Don't let yourself get out of sorts. Don't actually have a heart attack on the stream, because we want to try to avoid that as much as possible. But that's Bear Football directly after the game, the Bear Debate. And also, we appreciate everybody that tunes into this show. The fifth season of Buffon 55, and we really appreciate everyone that listens to this show. Alyssa, what are you working on? What do you got going on? I know that your schedule is ridiculous, so we're just happy to have you on here. So what's going on?
But first, let me just add, the best way to stay informed with everything happening here at the Barroom is to follow us on social media at Barroom Network. You can find us all across social media on Facebook and, of course, YouTube, where you're finding us right now. And make sure you bookmark BearsWire.com. I'm the managing editor over there, and there's plenty of Bears news happening, getting you ready for Cincinnati. And in case, you know, I don't know if you guys have seen, did you see the Matt Nagy McDonald's commercial?
No. Yeah, McNagy.
You didn't? Yeah, no, he's in a McDonald's commercial, and the reaction.
How did you miss that?
Themselves. I can't. I thought you guys saw that.
Yeah, I know. It came out the day after they lost, and it was just like, yeah, this is the most on-brand thing I ever saw. Matt Nagy working at McDonald's. Right.
I gotta.
So I'm covering the hard-hitting news like that. You know, Matt Nagy eventually becomes his employer after he's fired. But yeah, make sure you follow me over at BearsWire.com, getting you ready for the game and all the reaction afterwards.
Excellent. Well, thank you everybody for tuning in. That's going to do it for this episode of Buffon 55. We appreciate everyone, whether it's your first time or 55th time tuning into this, we appreciate you. Let's hope the Bears come out of Sunday with a notch in the win column. But either way, we'll see you next week on Buffon 55.